Hi, everybody. This is Peggy Tharp, and this is episode one, numero uno of the podcast. Sorry, would you repeat that? A podcast for language learners and language teachers. This series is about language learning and language accents. So every week we're going to look at a different language and how it interferes with English when students are learning English, how the parts of their first language bump up into English and get in the way of sounding good at English and being understood at English. So hang with us. We're going to start with Russian and move on to other languages. And be sure to check in at the end, because if there's any kind of goodies that we've got or videos that we are going to share or new publications coming out, online courses, whatever we've got to share, we'll tell you about it at the end. So let's get started with episode number one. Today I'm speaking with Jennifer England of EnglishLaboratory.com. She had some questions about Russian accents and how she as a fluency teacher could help her students and her clients manage their comprehensibility better in English, how they could improve their sound in English so that they're not always having to repeat themselves to native speakers. Hi, Jennifer.
Hey, Peggy. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
Excellent. Oh, just I had a few questions. I'm curious about what Russians need to work on in terms of different sounds, sounds that are new to them in English, sounds that they have particular difficulties with.
So the first thing that comes to mind is that in intonation.
Uh-huh.
Russians use an intonation pattern that is not as high as English. You know how in English we start in the middle, then we go up, and then we go down to the end of a sentence or a phrase or communication. There's always a mid to high beginning, then a higher stress on something important, and then a drop down to the lowest. But in Russian, they start about the middle, and they only go downward. They don't have the heights that we have in English. And so to an English ear, they sound very serious or depressed or flat, sort of a low, flatter affect to it, because they don't have the depth of pitch, the wide range of pitch that English does. So one of the things that they can work on is finding those stressed words and sentences and pushing them up higher and trying to get up into a higher range than is comfortable for them. And I think it'll probably feel a little strange to be doing that. It might feel very theatrical for them, but or emotional or reactive or something like that. But I think if you work with them and show them the pattern over and over in natural English speaking, they'll realize, you know, okay, that's just the way English is. I've got to push it up a little more on the important things. So that's okay. What I mean, intonation.
Okay, and so would, for example, repeating phrases spoken by a native speaker, would that be helpful for them to be able to hear the intonation and then repeat it? Would that be a helpful exercise?
You know, you asked a question that is very controversial in among me and my colleagues, because some of us really love the idea of shadowing, where you listen to somebody in English and you try to follow along with them, repeating this, just follow along the curve and say it just as they had. And then there are others of us, and I'm one of those others, that thinks that that's just a really difficult and stressful way to try to imitate, that you can't match the speed and the pitch range and the volume and the duration. It's just very hard to match all of that if you're not, if you're just learning English, or if you're an intermediate level, say. It's still very hard to shadow. So rather than teach people to shadow, I think I like to teach them to hear it first and be aware of it. So to listen and listen for those high points and begin to notice them. And there's a million YouTube videos to listen to, and TV shows and movies and things like that. And then to try to do it themselves, rather than to try to shadow on top of somebody. I just haven't personally had a lot of success with shadowing, and my colleagues would argue otherwise. They seem to like it, but it's not the way I go. Not the way I roll.
Okay. Well, the can of worms that was.
Hey, you know, all my, the last 10 years have been about what works and what doesn't. And for me, shadowing in that mimicking on top of somebody way just doesn't work. Maybe it's my approach. I don't know, but it's not the way for me.
It's like trying to memorize intonation. It is possible to memorize. I mean,
right.
You hear and feel the rhythm and the sounds, the different pitch, or you don't.
Yeah.
And you learn it.
And why struggle? Why? It's very frustrating for students. And another thing that happens is when they're trying to keep up with the speed of a natural speaker in shadowing, they start to make all the syllables equal duration again, just so they can keep up with the speed. And then they don't sound like English speakers anyway. So. Right. That's just my argument against shadowing and for a more student-centered effort in becoming aware and then trying to do it yourself. That's my theory.
Okay, great, fantastic.
So let's see, what else? Then for Russians, when you get into segmental sounds like vowels and consonants, there are some things that they could learn that would really help, that they could change or learn. One of them, if they could add the sound a to the repertoire of sounds, that would be great, because a almost always lands in a stressed syllable, and that would clarify the stressed syllable of the word, which would make it much more recognizable for a listener. So a would be a good one.
Okay, and what do they do instead of the ah?
They shorten almost always. All of those front long vowels get shortened. So ah, I think gets shortened to sort of an eh sound.
Okay.
So actually might become actually, which in that case doesn't matter because probably we'd know what they said. But if there's a word like bat and bet, where the only difference is the sound of the vowel, then it would make a difference. So, and like I said, ah is longer. So if they work on ah, they're going to be working on duration. They're going to be working on energy. They're going to be working on a really important thing, which is lowering your jaw and loosening your jaw, because that's another place that Russian and English differs a lot, especially American English. Has a much lower, looser jaw. So doing some sort of jaw exercises to drop it, loosen it, move it to the left and right would be very helpful, because you've got to do that to make ah, right? Ah. And you don't have to do that to make eh. You don't have to lower. And Russian tends to have their jaw quite closed compared to English. So that will help them learn to loosen and lower their jaw will improve the A and the A and the E sounds for duration and quality.
Okay.
So A's a good one.
Okay.
Let's see, what else? I think O, if O is often pronounced as ah, and you just have to sort it out. And this is a problem this is a spelling problem. This is related to what they think they see in writing versus the way the sounds are. So there's just an issue of separating out O from ah. Let's see what else. Schwa. Schwa is often pronounced as ah. So that leads to that, you know, when you hear people imitate or parody a Russian accent or a Slavic accent, they might say, you know, I want to suck your blood, the Count Dracula cartoon. That's what's happening there, is to make that parody of an accent, they're saying, let's talk about that. I want, so the V replaces a W in English, I want to suck. So suck should be a schwa or a sound, and in, they're replacing it with an ah sound to sock, which makes it longer and stronger and not a schwa sound. Sock, right. Their blood, same thing with blood. It turns into an ah sound. So you get these long, higher, stronger vowels. I want to sock your blood. And they get longer, longer, longer. When in fact, schwa usually, even when it's stressed, it usually becomes a shorter vowel than ah. So, right. So working on schwa. Especially, of course, schwa in unstressed syllables. So that, you know, you want to say, let's see, what's a word? Famous, instead of famous would be English, but over-accented in Russian would be famous. You know, they see the O and the U and the S and they sound them all out. So. There's a lot of problems with learning English from written English to spoken by going that
direction. Yeah. Well, that seems to be across the board, not just for Russian speakers.
Yeah. Everywhere. If they had just learned it to speak it, to hear it and speak it when they were little, all of this would be moot.
Yes.
Yeah. So another long, short vowel issue would be ooh and uh.
Mm-hmm.
There are different sounds, but they, one of the main things is one is really long and one is shorter,
right.
Aside from where you articulate it. So those, that uh could be ooh from uh. It's good to separate those out if you can.
Okay.
And being with E and I, same thing. E is longer, I is shorter. E is stressed and tense, I is relaxed, like more like schwa. So separating those two out because they're minimal pairs, which means they could interfere with meaning if the words like bitten, what did I say, E and I, beat and bit are different words. So
Yeah, of course.
And, it, you know, if you're saying... instead of his, they put in the E sound, he's. So then you've got to rely on context, whether you mean he's H-I-S or he's H-E apostrophe S.
Yeah.
So the short I's are kind of a pain, but they're good to have.
Okay, yeah.
And final Y can be too short and it sounds like an I. Sorry, or money, or funny. I'm not doing it very good. I'm a terrible mimic. I'm not good at imitating, but lengthening out the final Y on words.
Okay.
Money, like stretching out that sound on the end of money, and giving it more duration, money. Just make it last longer.
Okay.
Let's see, what else? R,
yeah.
Of course. R is flicked or touching the alveolar bumps behind the top teeth, and that makes it sound like a D. And those two sounds are different in English, so working on R is very helpful.
Okay, now Peggy, I've noticed that so many people have problems with the R. Is That sound that we make, is that exclusive to English?
I don't know, but I do know that every single client I have so far has had to work on it. So yeah. I have not taught all the languages of the world, but the R sound, definitely. The consonant R in English, the harder R sound, R, is in other languages. But the R sound, the vowel plus R, I haven't found anybody that has it but us.
Wow.
Yeah, it's the vowel plus R that's the hardest one because it's nothing like a consonant at all. It's really a vowel. And when right. I teach it as a vowel combo, whatever the vowel is plus R. And you know, if it's spelled U-R-I-R or E-R, it all sounds like R.
Yeah.
And then if you have A-R in English, that's an A and an R put together. And if you have O-R in English, that's an O sound and an R put together. So the R is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
T can use more explosiveness sometimes, especially at the beginning of words. So they don't put as much air and push in it. Say if I say telephone in English, telephone, of course I feel the air, but when they say it, it might sound more like telephone, a T okay. with air, telephone, which is almost a D.
Yeah.
What else? H can sound very, very, not down here, but very fricative.
Okay.
Like I said, I'm a terrible mimic, but it's got more fricative. It's got a closer range. Instead of in English, it's like just what you do when you clean your glasses, right?
Right.
But in Russian, it can be tighter. Your tongue is up higher, tighter. The space where the air goes through is smaller, and so it can sound. It can sound. The airflow vibrates. Yeah. I don't know if I'm explaining this right. So you got to get your tongue down lower and your jaw open. Here's the jaw again.
Right.
Looser and open. Yeah. Let's see what else. In my memory, V might be switched with F, so that I guess that would mean it, lack of voicing would be the main key for V. But I also, in my memory, I think it may be switched with W. I want to, right? Instead of I want to.
Mm-hmm.
So V is something to let your vocal cords vibrate on. Otherwise, if you don't vibrate and you just have air, it comes out an F.
Right.
So if it's the vibration, then it sounds like an F. But if it's just a confusion, it could sound like a W.
Right. Okay.
TH. So TH might be replaced with, voiced and voiceless TH, the might be replaced with t and
right
and d, or I think I've also heard it replaced with s and z's and zumsy. No, not that. That wouldn't be it. Let me think of it. See if I can think of an example. Yeah, some zing, the zing on there instead of thing, some zing. Okay. Or something.
Okay, yeah.
So you got to sort out what they're doing with TH, voiced and voiceless, whether it's moving it to a T or D or moving it to an S or Z, and teach the TH.
Okay.
Let's see.
Fantastic, Peggy.
Oh, what else? I think it's really important, the whole jaw thing.
Right.
To loosen up the jaw. I really recommend getting a looser, lower jaw. And I do this with almost all my clients, actually, going to American English, which is not quite the same as British English. I think British English, and my perception is that their jaws are, they keep their jaws higher. But Americans let their jaws looser and lower. And that looseness is important for all those full vowel sounds like, oh, you got to have your jaw low, and ah, and ah. You have to have a big, loose, open, relaxed space. Relaxed is a thing. Even if I'm resting in between speaking, my jaw is loose and there's this little space there, but my jaw is loose, kind of like that. It's always just hanging loosely. It's not slammed shut. And
okay, so have you got some exercises to loosen up that jaw?
We just work on it this way, you know. I kind of use a ruler sometimes or something so people can see the change in jaw drop if I'm online or even in person. They have to notice and they have to disengage. And disengaging is something new to a lot of people when they're speaking, to let this whole thing loose and drop it down and then move it left and right. Nice and slow. Get it all loose. And then after you've got it all open and loose, then go back to that relaxed neutral position with just a little space there. That's how I do it.
Okay. Fabulous. Oh, that was nice and relaxing, Peggy. Thank you.
I know. I have a lot of tension here. Major tension in the jaw. So, I can't think of anything else off the top of my head.
That's been very helpful, Peggy. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Let's do this again. That was fun.
Okay. Yeah, that was a blast. Talk to you soon, Peggy.
All right. Bye, Jennifer.
Bye.
Well, that wraps up episode 1 of Sorry, Would You Repeat That? The podcast about language learning, language teaching, and language accents. So if you'd like to know more about Jennifer, go to EnglishLaboratory.com. That's English-Laboratory.com. Or you can get in touch with her at Jennifer@EnglishLaboratory.com. English-Laboratory.com. Don't forget the little hyphen there. And if you want to know more about me, I'm Peggy Tharp. I have a website you can crawl around and find all kinds of information. It's an informational website, not a sales website. It's AmericanPronunciationCoach.com. AmericanPronunciationCoach.com. And I have a YouTube channel. Please go there and check it out and subscribe. Lots of short 3-minute videos on how to help students improve their sound in English, their pronunciation in English. 2 more ways that you can catch up with me. 1 is to go to Amazon.com, put my name in the search bar, Peggy Tharp, PEGGYTHARPE, and you'll find the pronunciation guides that I've written. And the other way is to sign up for my email list, and I'll send out an occasional newsletter or announcement. About 1 a month is all I can get to, but I tell you anything that I think is cool, something new I've written, other things that people have done, let you know what's happening in the world of accents and language teaching. Thanks for joining us here on episode 1, our very first episode of Sorry, Would You Repeat That?